When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey everybody, it's Josh Rutledge, your co-host for Fearscape Paranormal Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to support us more, please head over to our website, fearscapepodcast.com. There you can click on store and browse some really awesome t-shirts and maybe pick a couple up, or even go to our Patreon page and see how you can support us monthly. We love bringing you awesome content just as much as you like listening to it. Enjoy the show.
The following program is presented for entertainment purposes. WCHQ does not necessarily endorse the ideas presented.
Fearscape is a program that explores the legends and lore around many creepy and scary things. Information is researched and presented in an entertainment fashion and is presented based off of what we found. Legends have a way of changing over time, so...
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another spooky edition of Fearscape. Here on 100.9 FM WCHQ, as well as the Destination Nation Network. I am one of your hosts, Stefan Gearhart, and I am joined, as usual, by the magnificent Josh Rutledge.
Magnanimous?
Milk of Magnesius.
Yeah,
Josh Rutledge. Yep. We've got a really cool episode today. We're going to be covering the Exorcism of Roland Doe, which is what inspired the 1971 novel The Exorcist, as well as the 73 film adaptation. We also have in the studio back with us our good friend Keith Age, who's got some pretty good firsthand experience with some of this. He was part of a documentary that was made called The Haunted Boy that was on Sci-Fi, and it's pretty awesome, and we're going to have him here to help fill in some blanks and talk to us about his experience of being at the actual house where a lot of this took place. And but I'm super pumped, man.
Yeah,
you guys doing okay?
Good episode.
Hanging in there like a hair in a biscuit.
You do what you can, man. It's the holiday season. So why not talk about demon possession, right?
Right, exactly.
We're going to get into that. But before we get into that, let us get into a little bit of spooky news. All right, so for spooky news, boy, oh boy, do I got a good one. This is called from a website called Singular 14, and that's T-E-A-N, not T-E-E-N. But anyways, the headline reads, Trucker reports 7-foot-tall person with wings near O'Hare International Airport. Oh, yeah.
Sure wasn't just an airplane. You know. Like
no way, man. The Manuel Navarrete of UFO Clearinghouse, another place like MUFON, received a report recently from a man who said he was standing outside of a cargo dock at O'Hare International Airport in Chicago when he spotted a 7-foot-tall person with wings just outside of a fence by the parking lot. The sighting reportedly took place real recently at around 6:30 p.m. on November 26th. So this is just a few weeks back.
Just right before Thanksgiving?
Yeah. So according to the... Yeah, maybe it was a turkey. according to the report, the man said, I was at the airport picking up a load at Nippon Cargo Airlines, and I was already backed into a dock and was standing away from the truck smoking a cigarette while they loaded my truck. I was looking toward the runways in the direction of the tunnel, and that is when I noticed something that looked like a large bird standing just outside the fence of the parking lot. It was not hard to miss because two street lamps were nearby. It looked like a person, but with wings that were stretched out and flapping, and it had just big red eyes, and it was walking away from the fence towards the open field, and then it began to flap its wings and disappear. Navarette was able to speak with the witness over the phone. He says, I spoke with the witness and was able to get a little more information. The witness primarily spoke in Spanish, but was able to report the sighting with the help of his daughter and her boyfriend. He was standing away from his truck as it was being loaded, smoking the cigarette, like we said. The witness stated that the creature was about 7 feet tall, using the fence as a point of reference. When I asked him how he was able to be so certain as the height of the being, the driver stated that he had been to this location many times, and he estimates the fence to be about 8 feet high. Using the fence, he was able to ascertain that the being was at least 7 feet tall. When I asked him how large the wings were, he said at least 6 feet across and black. This here, it continues to go on that they believe that this is possibly a Mothman sighting.
Well, something that's really interesting here is, and when we had John Keith and you talked about the stuff out in the desert with the Native American stuff, right. You know, a lot of these things have red eyes.
Yeah.
Your night hags always have red eyes.
Yeah.
I mean, that looks like a common trait for things that go bump in the night is they have red eyes.
Well, so do a certain type of owl that me and my girlfriend were discussing the other night. These things are almost 6 feet tall. They have big bulbous red eyes.
Oh, yeah, I saw that on Facebook, those really big birds that are almost as big as humans.
These are owls, and, you know, birds of the feather do flock to airports and things of that nature.
Right.
So, you know, who knows?
Yeah. Well, and maybe they are flocking because within the same area, within a 15-mile radius, since dating back into October, there were sightings of a large-winged humanoid in Park Ridge. There was a large-winged humanoid accompanied by several other beings on October 19th. Near the Edward Hotel in Rosemont, there was a sighting of a tall creature with bright red eyes and large wings near O'Hare in July recently, as well as a 6 foot tall creature flying over the Des Plaines River in Rosemont, Illinois. So once again, the Mothman has been sparking up some debate again, showing up. So,
yeah, so what's interesting would be to look at if there is one of those, you know, type of owls. That has also been spotted in the area. Because you would think that if you're a bird watcher, I'm sure there's
ornithologist.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. You're lucky I had that one.
Really. That they probably have noticed if something's in the area, right?
So. Well, you know, I know a lot of cryptozoologists, and the very first thing they'll tell you is 95% of everything that has been, you know, documented is misidentified, you know, and it's probably only about 5% that they can't figure out what it is.
Right.
But it's that 5% that's got me excited.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Well, it's same here. It's like your website, you know, it says that you live in the 1% space, right?
Yep.
So,
yep.
Yeah.
Interesting. Oh, well, that's what I had for spooky news, so we'll go ahead and get out here. I don't think either of us said we had any creepy catch-up.
No,
right?
Creepy catch-up.
Nothing. Yeah, it was a pretty nice week. I've actually had a pretty good week.
I think I've probably been too busy to notice anything.
Yes,
so,
same. So let's move right into the topic for the eve. So what do we got, Josh?
The Exorcism of Roland Doe.
Or Robbie Mannheim or whatever. I mean, this thing has had many pseudonyms.
Right.
No, his real name is Roland.
It is Roland because I've also heard Ronald Doe.
Well, that's his nickname.
Okay.
Well, and also in my research, I came across Robbie or Rob.
Yeah, that's
one I saw here, the Robbie.
Nande plume that has been added.
Well, I wondered how
I also saw Jack. I don't know.
Well, I wondered how much of that was to protect his identity, you know.
A lot of it because he grew up to be a rocket scientist
for
NASA.
Yes.
Well, so and that's what I didn't when I was doing my research on the exorcism piece, I didn't actually pull a lot of the detail in around what happened to him after the fact. So
yeah, according to him, he doesn't remember anything.
Yeah. That's what I've heard too.
That's interesting. So yeah, I mean Keith, you won't look at me and say, where the crap did you do your research at? Because hopefully I got some good information here that you can help me.
I will.
So, yeah. So
you went to Ghostopedia. Yeah.
The Wookiepedia. So, yeah. So, we've got... Roland was born into a German Lutheran family in the... basically, in the 1940s, 1949 is when kind of all this stuff started taking place. So the family lived in Cottage City, Maryland.
Right.
And Roland was an only child, and he depended upon, you know, the adults in his life for playmates.
So he'd have been about 14, because it looks like he was born around 1935,
yep,
right? So
that
14,
sounds right.
15
14,
years old.
15 years old. Mm-hmm. And primarily his Aunt Harriet. And his aunt was, it says here, was a spiritualist and introduced Roland to the Ouija board when he expressed interest in it. Now, one thing, I saw, there was a lot of in your documentary, you know, The Haunted Boy, there's a lot of mention of the Ouija board, and something that always just, I don't know, got me a little bit is anytime they talk about a Ouija board, it seems to always be in a very negative, you know, demon calling type of thing. Like, yeah, that's the only thing you use a Ouija board for, is to get in touch
this
with
is called Satan. Hey, Satan, I need a sandwich. Yes, goodbye.
So, I mean, you know, it's just, and maybe that's just a little bit of storytelling. I don't know.
I think it is. I think a lot of it is you put in what you get out of it. And because I don't think the devil is at Parker Brothers.
Exactly.
Going, standing at the end of the assembly line going, this one's haunted, this one's haunted.
Right.
This one's not, this one is, this one is. You know, I think a lot of the older stuff, the stuff that the Druids came out with, because that's where the Ouija board actually comes from.
Oh, yeah, I've seen some real leather talking boards made from skin and some weird stuff.
Animal skin, I assume.
Yes, not human skin, no.
No, I've seen
though
them,
I'm sure I've, there's human ones
I've
for sure.
I've seen them with human skin.
Yeah, I've seen tattoos as
yeah. And, you know, so again, I think it's a lot of it is whatever faith you put into it is what you're going to get out
right.
of it. If you're a bunch of kids wanting to be scared, you're
right.
going to get scared.
Right.
Yeah, I've also heard tale that Parker Brothers themselves put a lot of the negative press out for Ouija boards as a way to help push sales.
Oh, yeah. It's a scary thing.
But I've never had any bad experiences with it. So.
One of the images that shows in The Haunted Boy of like the original Parker Brothers boxing, it's like they're asking, what will I be when I grow up? I mean, it's just like
rocket scientist.
see, now you can go back to when you're dealing with toys. Again, whatever you put into it is probably what you're going to get out of it. Magic 8-Ball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Remember those?
Yeah. Robert the Doll.
Yeah.
Sorry, Robert.
Teddy Ruxpin. I mean, I don't know.
Well, if you're going to put a cassette tape into that, so you're going to get a recorded voice.
Yeah. That's what you're going to get out of it.
What else we got, Josh?
Yeah, so he had special interest in a Ouija board, and his Aunt Harriet introduced him to it.
Man, Aunt Harriet, that's a classic aunt name, by the way.
By the way, is it aunt or aunt? I don't know.
Depends. You know, like I have an Aunt Joan, but my Aunt Paulette. I swear. I call my Aunt Joan Aunt Joan.
Same side of family?
Same side.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Don't ask me why. I don't know.
Well, my sister-in-law, a little off topic, my sister-in-law, just really wants us to refer to her as Auntie.
Mm-hmm. So. That's Sarah likes. My wife likes Aunt.
Yeah. So, all right. So, 13, 14, Roland, living in Cottage City, Maryland. In the early January, shortly after his Aunt Harriet died, Roland began to experience strange things. He heard scratching sounds coming from under the floors, the walls in his room. Water dripped inexplicably from pipes and walls.
That would make me offer my soul to the devil.
Now, you got to remember, this is the late 40s.
Yeah.
Right. In a house in Maryland, who knows how the age
I just
of
think
house.
Of that Donald Duck cartoon where the faucet keeps dripping and he just gets so frustrated.
By the way, my kids refer to me as Donald Duck because I get mad and have irate screaming fits when I yep.
Fantastic.
I have twins who Donald Duck's kind of like main people that are things that make him mad, Chip and Dale. I have twin girls. They're my Chip and Dale.
Let's hope they're not Chip and Dale's dancers.
No. Wrong. Anyways. Yep. So in shortly after her death, started experiencing strange things. The most troubling thing was that his mattress would suddenly move. So, I mean, bed, I don't know, mattress would suddenly move. So disturbed, Ronald's family sought the help of every expert they knew. The Hunklers, I guess is the last name there, consulted doctors, psychiatrists, and even their local Lutheran minister. But no help to be had.
Now, what I wonder is did the parents experience any of this? Were they able to see any of this?
They did see it, and that is why they finally got some advice that you need to get out of Maryland and go to St. Louis.
That's what I figured, because, you know, we talk about this a lot on my horror movie podcast, because in movies, parents never believe the kids, and the husband never believes the wife. Like, it's always one of...
We were talking about this last episode. It's like, you know, you're just having a crazy imagination.
Yeah, and it's just like, you know, and so I'm like, I assumed they had to have seen something for them to say, okay, you know.
Well, so it kind of talks a little bit about it here, and basically it says that at one point in time, you know, I'll get to it in just a second, but he had some writing on his stomach or chest that identified that maybe they needed to go to St. Louis.
Right. It actually said St. Louis on his stomach.
Yeah. So that was what the indication was to go to St. Louis.
Written backwards on his stomach.
Hmm. So almost as if it was coming from the inside.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That's crazy. Ooh, that gave me jerkin' spells.
Jerkin spells.
That's what my dad uses. That's what he says to this day for heebie-jeebies. He says, you give me jerkin spells.
Well, you know, as a Wiccan who casts spells, it may be interpreted as something else.
Yes, it may. I do have spells for that.
Okay, so their local Lutheran minister, they suggested that the family seek the assistance of the Jesuits. Now, I gotta ask, What is
Jesuits are a sect of Catholicism. There's a lot of different subsects, and a lot of times Jesuits are close, I would say, to modern monks.
Okay, are they
they were like, a pretty big sect.
Are they like more intense, less intense? Are they more, I guess, focused on the Catholicism?
Yeah, because the reason I bring up monks is because monks devote themselves. Right. I mean, Jesuits,
and that's basically what they ended up doing when they got to St. Louis. You know, there was 14 priests that got to interact with this boy. And they ended up putting him into one of the, it's not even there anymore. I just lost the name of it. It started with an A. It was almost like a cathedral and a total place where like a hospital just for this stuff. Oh, I'm trying to think of the name of it.
Not an asylum.
No.
No.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
But the only thing left of it is the parking lot. And the huge cross that's set out in front of it is actually in the St. Louis Museum.
Yeah, I saw that in the documentary.
Yeah. I already plan on going to check that out next time I go to St. Louis.
And they just said, there's not a lot we can do with him. And then that's when he got sent to the other place.
Yeah.
And that's where almost everything that was documented took place.
Yeah. And I would add that Jesuits are kind of close to nuns in a way, where they really, their whole, that's devoted to works.
Okay.
Right? You know, and so they're not really at churches a lot of times and things like that. They're working.
Gotcha. You know, they're doing stuff. They're out in the community, so to speak.
Yes.
So they get to, they go to Father E. Albert Hughes, who is a local Catholic priest, and asked his superior's permission to perform an exorcism on the boy in late February 1949.
Oh, so they moved pretty quick.
Well, I don't think they're not in St. Louis yet.
Right, but I mean, like, even then,
they're still in Maryland. Yes.
Even then, I mean, this started in January.
Right, so this is like a month later. Yeah, maybe three weeks.
How many stories do we come across? Well, like, how long it takes?
The bloody St. Louis is what threw him over the edge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this cat tries an exorcism, and Ronald broke off a piece of the spring from the mattress he was strapped down to and lashed the priest across his shoulders.
Woo.
So, I mean, to be 13, 14 years old, mm-hmm. strapped to a bed.
He had just turned 13.
So, I mean, that's a lot of strength to unlash yourself.
I still can't do that.
Rip a spring out of the mattress
and
then attack someone. I mean, it's pretty
impressive.
Yeah. You know, it's the strength of Zeus there.
Yeah.
So a few days later, some red scratches appeared on the boy. One of the scratches formed the word Lewis, which indicated that Ronald's mother needed to go to St. Louis, where they, you know, they had relatives there as well. So, in order to find a way to save their son. Mm-hmm. So, a cousin of the family was attending St. Louis University at the time of Roland's struggles. She put the Hunklers in touch with Father Walton H. Halloran and Reverend William Bowdern. Is that the correct pronunciation?
Sounds like it.
So. Bowdern, yes.
So after consulting with the university's president, these two Jesuits agreed to perform an exorcism on young Roland with the help of several assistants. And this is where you talk about the 14 individuals involved. So
I need a young priest and an old priest and another priest and a brother named Daryl and another priest and another priest. And another
I need
priest.
A red priest, blue priest. So, yeah, so the men gathered at the residence on Roanoke Drive in March 1949. So again,
Roanoke Drive, how ironic.
So, and again, 1949, this all started in January 1949.
We're two months in.
There, the exorcist witnessed scratching on the boy's body and the mattress moving violently. These were the same types of things that had happened in Maryland when the first exorcism failed. Amid these bizarre happenings, Bowdern and Halloran, according to their reports, noticed a pattern in Roland's behavior. He was calm and normal during the day, but at night, after settling in for bed, he would exhibit strange behavior, including screaming and wild outbursts. So this is, it kind of says here in parens that these are the details that identifies the true story in The Exorcist.
This is the bed moving, the screaming. Right.
He would also start speaking in Latin, but it would only happen at nighttime.
And only at nighttime. Very interesting. Makes you think back to other legends and lore about creatures that can only exist at night.
Well, that was at the beginning of this. Now this, at this point, when they did the exorcism and everything that Josh is talking about, they were already in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is, they're in St. Louis. They got in touch with the folks. They assembled their exorcist party. And they went over to the house.
Time for an exorcist party, y'all.
and they got to work. So, yeah. It says that Ronald would also enter a trance-like state and start making sounds in a guttural voice.
So that also fits the book and the movie as well.
Yep. So the priest supposedly also saw mysterious flying objects in the boy's presence, and noted that he would react violently when he saw any sacred object presented by the attending Jesuits.
Interesting. So just objects in the room flying around?
Yep. Okay. I mean, whatever is prevalent in 1949.
So not the Mothman?
No. Yeah, I mean, I don't think they saw other cryptids flying around. It's a party, y'all.
Welcome to the Exorcist Party. This is Bigfoot. Don't float too high. The ceiling's only 8 foot.
Ain't no party like it. It's just a party. Yeah. So, at one point during this weeks long ordeal. So, Matt, it's a weeks long. I mean, right. This is like they're over there like every day or every other day trying to get something to happen. So, I mean, that's perseverance, right?
Yeah.
There. I mean, it's not only for the family, but also the people who are involved in trying
well,
to...
Well, and, you know, everything we've read about exorcisms and stuff like that, it is a misnomer that it can be done in 5 minutes. I mean, it a lot of times does take weeks,
You mean
months.
John Constantine didn't just walk in
no, neither
put
did
a mirror
Sam
over
and,
top of the
neither
bed?
Neither did Sam and Dean from Supernatural.
So, Borden reportedly saw an X appear in the scratches on Ronald's chest, which he believed signified the number 10. I don't understand the importance of the number 10.
Maybe just the multitude, you know,
number
the,
of things.
The whole legion aspect.
Maybe.
Plus another thing, when you get talking about the X, when you're dealing with Catholicism, a lot of people think a cross is how they actually hung people. They didn't hang them by a cross. They actually did it what looks like a T, but set down sideways to where it's almost an X.
Right.
And that's where a lot of that also comes from, too.
Yeah, I have actually seen that in, like, historical depictions of things where they would have, basically, you're spread out, arms and legs, spread eagle on this thing, as opposed to the typical cross with your feet crossed in the middle and nailed down. So yeah, not that you wouldn't also be nailed down on this game, because you have to be held up there somehow. But yeah. It says in another incident, a pitchfork-shaped pattern of red lines moved from the boy's thigh and snaked down towards his ankle. So this is like lines drawn, and it moved. That's a whole different ball game right there. I mean,
yeah, I've seen that imagery show up in other demon type movies.
Like in Hauntings, lot of people get scratched.
Yes, I got scratched.
it's usually in a three form, like it's like three fingers just straight down.
That's what I had at the Whispers Estate. I had three go across here and three go across the other side of my neck.
So I'm gonna say real quick, because I was thinking about this. I was listening to one of the older podcasts, and you were talking about one of your night hags, and your night hags always have three fingers. And a lot of these talking about like the cryptids and things, a lot of those things have three fingers. Aliens have three fingers. There's like a lot of...
Mickey Mouse has three fingers.
Well, it actually has four.
Well, if you count
three
the thumb.
Three and a sum. But yeah. Anyway, so... But I mean, there's just a lot of that type of similarity between stories and accounts of the three-finger piece.
Yeah, absolutely.
Three fingers of chicken.
And I will tell you this. I looked up what the number 10 means in the Bible. In the Bible, the number 10 is known as a symbol of the authority of God and his government on the earth. So I find that very interesting.
Huh, that is interesting.
Yeah.
It's almost, well, I mean, I guess in this case...
It could
case,
be a mock
it could
as
be
well.
Mocking, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a, so, these types of things happened every night for more than a month. And everyone witnessing the events believed that Roland was possessed by 10 demons.
Simply based off of that 10?
That 10, that X being there.
Okay.
So, again, it could have been a misinterpretation of whatever that X was intended to represent. But, I mean, you know, that's what they went with at the time.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, we could theorize all day on what that means.
Yeah, it's only an hour show.
Yeah.
So the two main priests, which was the Bowerden and I don't remember the other guy's name. Halloran, I think.
Yeah, Halloran.
Yep. They never gave up. They continued the exorcism night after night. On the evening of March 20th, the exorcism reached an unhealthy new level. Ronald urinated all over his bed and began shouting and cursing at the priests. Now, Ronald's parents, or I guess Roland in this case, had had enough. They took him to Alexian Brothers Hospital. This
was, yeah, that's what it was, Alexian.
In St. Louis for more serious treatment.
So they basically have said, okay, the church isn't working, let's go to science.
Well, no, they haven't taken him to the church yet. He went from his house to Alexian Brothers.
Well, I just meant the church in general.
Well, that's the Alexian Brothers, that's more like the monk
situation. Oh, okay, yeah, so it's a Catholic hospital.
Kind of like St. Mary's and Elizabeth.
Yeah,
right.
Our Lady of Peace.
And they kept him there for a little over, I think it's a week and a half to 2 weeks, and then they moved him again.
Yeah, so they, and I remember in the documentary it talks about they went to the new building for the Alexian Brothers, and nobody there wanted to talk about or even acknowledge that anything actually happened.
Yeah, like I said, the old building is gone. All that's left of that is the cross and the museum. And one of the things that happened while he was there, the parking lot cracked.
Yes, I saw that on there.
All right, and they heard it from inside. It was just, they thought there was actually like an earthquake or a plate shifting or something. That's how bad it cracked.
Wow.
And they have repaired it since 1949. Even they poured asphalt over it and everything else, it still cracks to this day. It's still there.
Yeah.
Or it was when
they said,
we filmed.
I saw that they said that they tried to repair it. They tried to do everything.
Right.
They've tore it all the way down to the dirt.
To no avail.
To put it back. That's crazy.
It's the same crack every time.
So the, finally, on April 18th, a miracle, as here in quotes, occurred in Ronald's room at Alexian Brothers. It was the Monday after Easter, and Ronald awoke with seizures. He yelled at the priest, saying that Satan would always be with him.
Jeez.
The priest laid holy relics, crucifixes, medals, and rosaries on the boy. At 10:45 p.m. that evening, the attending priest called on St. Michael to expel Satan from Ronald's body. They shouted at Satan, saying that St. Michael would battle him for Ronald's soul. 7 minutes later, Ronald came out of his trance and simply said, "He's gone." The boy recounted how he had had a vision that St. Michael vanquished Satan on a great battlefield.
God, I would love to know the details of his vision. Like, I would love to ask him to describe that.
Well, but, I mean, he doesn't remember any of it, so.
Well, I mean, like, at the time.
Oh, at the
time, I would have loved to, if someone had recorded that.
Hey, you went through this ordeal for 2.5 months. Can you just go ahead and read this off to a stenographer? So she can
no, that's not what I mean. I would just love to ask him questions about
well,
it.
Well, see, that's why we have the 14-page document from the priest.
The priest diary,
You know, and, I mean, they sat down every night and typed this thing out. And a lot of it, you could say, okay, somebody's faking. But then there's other stuff that you can't fake. He had nothing sharp in his room to create the words. And he ended up with writing all over him and stuff. And it also got up here, and he wrote on the bed every night in Latin.
Yeah, they gave him a pen or a marker or
whatever. Well, they ended up putting... Instead of sheets on his bed, they ended up putting paper on his bed. And they gave him a marker and a pencil, and it would just, by morning, it'd be full. And those things are locked up in the Vatican.
Yeah. Man, I would pay every bit of money I have to visit those Vatican vaults.
Yeah.
Well, not just for this
purpose. Tried.
Yeah.
we got a resounding no.
I mean, one of the coolest dreams I ever had is that I broke into the Vatican vault. And seriously, and I had found there were cryptids down there and creatures and cages.
Jimmy Hoffa.
And Jimmy Hoffa's down there, yeah. And just so much cool stuff.
Well, if you believe the theory that of the multiverse, that when you dream at night, you dream of yourself in a different multiverse. Experience doing maybe I did,
but I do want to talk about the diary real quick. Now, according to the documentary, this was only found not too long ago, right?
Yeah, and it was in the last 5 years,
right?
Yeah.
And this was at where was that found? In the other location? Is that?
And in the new place where they had the new Lisa's Brothers is actually a Section 8 housing now.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. And that the whole fifth floor, you can't. They were told not to touch it.
It's the roof.
Yeah.
It's the ceiling. There's nothing but rafters up there in one room.
Yeah.
And that was his room. That's where they put him. You come up the elevator and you turn right, and that's it. This place is still under lock and key.
Yeah, it was cool seeing you guys go up there. And, you know, the fact that it's still untouched, like that they were told, leave it alone.
Yeah.
Leave it alone.
Yeah, they had everything moved out, and that is locked up at an army base, his bed. His chest of drawers.
Yeah, just like Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Seriously, that's what it was.
Yeah. My second place I would like to break into. Yeah,
we tried to get access to that, and we were told leave or we'd be arrested by armed guards.
Isn't that crazy, man? It's like,
it's like where do they really protect it? I mean, it's just
why and why? I mean, you know, this is the 1940s. You know, it's just. What the hell?
Yeah.
And also the movers that they paid to move this stuff, within 24 hours, something bad happened to every one of them.
Right. You and I talked about that. The curse.
The curse.
Yep. That even your crew had some stuff happen.
Yeah, we had some stuff. And then, like I said, that was a really creepy place. And if you see the documentary and as we're driving by, it looks like a castle. I mean, it really does.
Yeah.
The pointy roofs and everything else. And like I said, it's now a Section 8 housing where some of these people just do not have any idea where they're living
at. Yeah, I have no idea. But they all say that they've had stuff happen. And even the woman that was in charge was hesitant.
Oh, yeah. None of them want to talk. And when we got to the house where they were staying at, you know, I'll tell you what, I'm not a psychic at all. I don't feel things. when I go ghost hunting or whatever, there's only three places where the hair on the back of my neck has stood up, and this is one of them. We walked through the doorway.
Right through the house.
Well, this is considered, you know, the Holy Grail.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. For right. sure.
Well, I found that what's interesting is there was, like, several newspaper articles, and I guess that's really where more mainstream individuals heard or found out right. about the exorcism and all the events. And that's probably what spawned...
Well, that's where Peter Blatty right. heard about it. And he heard about it in college. Again, Hollywood got, after he wrote the book, Hollywood got a hold of
oh,
it
yeah.
and changed it from St. Louis to Maryland, because Maryland's more of more of the capital and everything else, yeah. and this is happening in our...
Well, it also has a very... Maryland has a very kind of steeped, ancient kind of feel to it. As yeah. far as when you talk about the United States in the how the age of the country, anything that's on the East Coast just has more historical feel to it.
Northern East Coast, yeah. I mean, you know, you got Roanoke, for God's sake.
Yeah,
you know.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, it just... So I mean, from a scare the crap out of people's storytelling yeah. perspective, it would make sense to put it there.
But yeah, but that's where Peter Blatty got. He heard the story, and then did a little research and expounded yeah. on it. And the only thing he could find were those articles.
Well, what's interesting here is what I found is they think that the articles were the reason they knew about the story was that the family's original Lutheran minister is who kind of, I guess proper term is, leaked. Right. the information to the papers.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of a, I don't know, that's kind of a...
Hey, I mean, at least it wasn't them.
Well, that's true, but I mean, it just, when you think about the trust that you put in your family minister to be able to, for them to go and say, hey, let me tell you about this crazy thing that had happened, you right. know, it's just, yeah, so it's kind
of... I mean, people talk. I mean, it doesn't even mean he leaked. He could have just been talking.
Well, that's true.
And, you know, somebody picked it up and said, man, that would make a great story. I mean, yeah,
but we're just talking about the diary. The thing that piqued my interest in the diary was there was one section where a janitor had came to work for the first time, and as he's mopping the floor and everything, the monks are introducing him to this patient, that patient, and he gets to Roland, and they say, this is Roland, he has epilepsy, don't pay him no attention.
So they didn't even...
The kid is strapped down to the bed. Okay, because at this point things are happening all through the day and night, right?
Yep.
And as they went on writing, he said that this janitor came and got one of them. Hey, there's something wrong with this kid, and they went, "Don't worry about it. He'll be okay. He's probably just having a fit." And he says, "No, he's floating." And at this point, the janitor just quit, and I'm not coming back.
Wow.
You know, so that really got my interest in it, and. Just the fact that, you know, they wrote this diary and it's been hidden for so long.
Yeah.
And then, you know, of course, like I said, the actual Vatican wants nothing to do with us. Or, you know, we right. even offered to come over and, you know, how much of a donation could we make?
Right.
Just to see it.
It's really, because, so on the one hand, you could say, well, they're hiding something. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, you could say, well, maybe they just don't want the negative press that comes along with the validation of events occurring.
Right. I mean, I don't know. I mean, there was just so much stuff that happened, like the bed spring across the shoulder. You've got one of the priests got his nose broke. I think Halloran got his nose yeah. broke by the... I mean, here's this kid. He's right. just a little kid.
You got to remember something. Bowden was an ex-Army Ranger, like a mm-hmm. priest. He was not some young, shy thing. He was also an ex-football player.
Right.
He was a big, bulky guy. And he couldn't control this 13-year-old boy.
Right.
He couldn't out-muscle him.
Well, I remember in the documentary that I think it was Bowden, they were talking about, went to the Catholic Church, wanted to enlist for World War II. They said no.
Mm-hmm.
He went to somebody else, I guess a higher party in the Catholic right. Church. They said no, and he basically said, I'm just going to not give up. You're just going to have to let me in. And so finally they let
yeah,
him.
Yeah, he ended up becoming a chaplain.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. But it was like a chaplain with one of the toughest squads.
Yeah.
In like I said, it was the 9th unit of the Army Rangers.
Shoo-wee,
and,
man.
And that's how he actually got in. They were still telling him, no, no, no. He went and signed in.
Yeah.
And, you know, enlisted. And then once he was in there, that's when the army said, oh, you're a priest. We need priests.
Yeah.
And but he saw his share of combat and everything else.
Yep. So one thing that I do like to do whenever we have topics like this is I like to pull in some, I guess, counter-arguments or people who dispute the validity of what's being
No, that's fine.
Told.
It's like, you know, I gave you one for the owl earlier.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So,
which is complete bullcrap, but I mean, it's fine.
Fine, those owls are 6 foot tall, but this was a 7 foot tall.
Yeah, this one's seven.
That owl was standing on a stool or something. I don't know. So we got this author guy named Thomas B. Allen.
Okay.
Are you familiar with him at all?
No.
Okay. So he basically says that the Jesuit priest, Father H. Halloran, was one of the last surviving eyewitnesses of the events. And Allen wrote in it that a diary kept by the attending priest, Raymond Bishop, detailed the exorcism performed on the pseudonymously. Yeah, there you go. Roland Doe, a.k.a. Robbie.
So right, yeah, this all comes from his book, Possessed, the True Story of an Exorcism in 93.
So Allen was speaking at an event in 2013, and he said, emphasized that definitive proof that the boy known only as Robbie was possessed by malevolent spirits is unattainable. Maybe he instead suffered from mental illness or sexual abuse or fabricated the entire experience. According to Allen, Halloran also, and this is in quotes, expressed his skepticism about potential paranormal events before his death. When asked in an interview to make a statement on whether the boy had been possessed, Halloran responded saying, "No, I can't go on record. I never made an absolute statement about the things because I don't feel it was qualified." Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think this is probably just, this is a little bit of, you know, how can you state for a fact what can't be proven?
Right.
And so, I mean, so a little bit of that is, you know, not willing to go on record, potentially, you know, not wanting to tarnish your entire lifetime as a priest and everything else. And then also just a little bit of the, you know, like I said, how do you prove the unprovable?
Well, again, I agree with you on certain aspects of this case could have just been, I'm trying to get attention. I've just scared the hell out of everybody I know.
Right.
Everything else, but there's certain things that, like I said, what got me was the guy's floating over here, you know,
right?
And yes. He's tied down to the bed. We can do that now with special effects. Couldn't do it back then,
right? Yeah.
And you know, when there's nothing in the room to create the cuts and the lettering and
right.
everything else in your room, how does that happen? It looks like it starts up as a welt. You know,
yeah.
From the inside coming up, bubbling up. That's
yeah.
what how the priest described it. Without there being some type of audio tape or something, you know, or videotape, you know, like all you have is the priest's word.
Yeah. So I mean, it. I guess with any of this kind of stuff, there's always going to be those people who will claim mental illness.
Ooh,
or
yeah. Or sexual abuse.
Or just some, you know, kid wanting to get that acknowledgement. But then there are also aspects of it that, like you say, can't necessarily be explained.
Mm-hmm.
So, moving on, I found another. This is from another author named Mark Opsasnik.
Right. He wrote, I looked that up as well. He wrote, he does a bunch of different stuff with rock and roll, but also different stuff. He wrote a publication on the Maryland Bigfoot, Miscellaneous and Unknown, as well as The Real Story Behind the Exorcist in 2006.
So he questioned many of the supernatural claims associated with the story, proposing that Roland Doe was simply a spoiled, disturbed bully who threw deliberate tantrums to get attention or to get out of school.
And just kept it up after getting beaten.
Right.
Okay.
Opsasnik reports that Halloran, who was present at the exorcism, never heard the boy's voice change. He thought the boy merely mimicked Latin words he heard clergymen say.
I mean, this was before Vatican II.
rather than gaining a sudden ability to speak Latin, Obsesnik reported that when marks were found on the boy's body, Halloran failed to check the boy's fingernails to see if he had made the marks himself. Obsesnik also questioned the story of Hughes' attempts to exorcise the boy in his subsequent injury, saying he could find no evidence that such an episode had actually occurred. During his investigation, Obsesnik discovered a couple things here. The exorcism did not take place at 3210 Bunker Hill Road in Mount Rainier, Maryland. The boy never lived in Mount Rainier. The boy's home was in Cottage City, Maryland. Much of the commonly accepted information about the story is based on hearsay. It is not documented and never fact-checked. There is no evidence of Father E. Albert Hughes visited the boy's home, had him admitted to Georgetown's hospital, requested that the boy be restrained. And there is ample evidence refuting claims that Father Hughes suffered an emotional breakdown and disappeared from the Cottage City community.
Gee, I wonder why.
So, some of this stuff was really interesting, because I don't, in all my research around Roland Doyle, like, I never came across anything around Mount Rainier or whatever that would be needed to be proven inaccurate. So yeah, I don't know, like, I don't know if that was, maybe that was part of the story at the time. That worked its way in there, or somebody misunderstood a fact or whatever and included that as
part of
the story.
Yeah, we're not seeing his publication or the documentary he was a part of or anything like that to see the full story there.
Well, also, he said there's no documentation of this happening, and his book came out in, what, 2006?
Yeah.
Yeah, the documentation from the priest wasn't found until, like, about 2014.
So then it'd be interesting to, maybe I'll try to do this. I might reach out to this Obsesnik guy and say, hey, you wrote this book. Since this, have you had a chance to watch The Haunted Boy? And what's your thoughts on since this new evidence has been uncovered?
Yeah.
Shots fired.
He was talking about Raymond Bishop, or Bishop Raymond. We got to meet the guy. We got to interview him. He's seemed credible, and the first thing you're going to think of is, why would a priest lie?
Right.
And he talked about a lot of it, but he also said the boy was extremely troubled. They all said that.
Yep.
But again, there was things that they just could not,
right,
document at the time as to, wow, I see monkeys flying, that
right.
type of thing.
Right.
And they said, other than him having a documented past, which he did, and that's where the whole the hospitals and stuff come in.
Right.
All right. They said tie him down just as soon as he came in the hospital, and that was in Maryland. All right. And they're thinking it's something mental.
Right.
And again, spoiled brat.
Yep.
Do something.
Trying to get attention. Yep. Whatever the case would be. Yep.
And it escalated past that to where now they've got him tied down to a bed in a Jesuit hospital, in a total different state. And yet they are doing, holy readings on him every day.
Right.
Everything else. So something made them
continue
yep. to do it. Something, somewhere. And that's where this diary comes in.
Right.
And, there's been said there's probably more to it than this.
Well, I'm sure there is.
But we'll never know because right. it is locked up in yep. the Vatican.
Under lock and key.
Yeah, and so, again, now you get to the conspiracy theory
right.
and everything else. We don't know. That's just like, the Ark of the Covenant might be there in the Vatican. Who knows?
Yeah, in the Vatican or in the army base.
Yeah.
yep.
Sitting there with fiery letters burning on the side.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It says open sesame.
Along with the crystal skull film.
Yeah.
So, we got a couple other potential answers for why it didn't happen. I'm not trying to talk you out of it. I'm just offering.
No, here's the thing. When you're dealing with anything, UFOs, until we get some definitive proof, Bigfoot, until somebody blows one's head off and drags its carcass out of
right,
the woods.
Right, and the government doesn't grab it first.
Right.
You know, this is a faith-based hobby.
Yes.
That's all it is right now. Because you've got to have faith that what you're reading and what you're trying to find out and researching is the truth. And, you know, that this stuff happens.
Yep. So, you know, at the end of the day, you can choose either to believe or not to believe.
Correct.
Yep. So, just a couple of things that I'll note here. So, two psychiatrists, Rob Doe, two psychiatrists. Rob Doe suffered from mental illness. To priests, this was a case of demonic possession. To writers and film video producers, this was a great story to exploit for profit. Those involved saw what they were trained to see. Each purported to look at the facts, but just the opposite was true. In actuality, they manipulated the facts and emphasized information that fit their own agendas.
For sure. I mean, if you look at the asylums of the past, I mean, some of the stuff that we don't even consider vaguely mental illness now was considered. I mean, even a woman that had very strong menstruation cramps would be sometimes put into an asylum for being crazy.
There is a 2-page document that we've had our hands on, and this, it varied from state to state, but if you looked at your husband the wrong way, he could have you locked up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it was, that's not true, but, that's the gist of it, you know.
There's there actually is some pretty crazy laws that used to exist on a state-by-state
rule of thumb, too. I mean, just...
Yeah.
You know, when we investigated the Roth House, and we were going through all these different places and hospitals, and we were like, my God, you could get put in here for stepping the wrong way on a sidewalk.
Yeah, it's crazy, and that's kind of my point here, and I think we still do that. I think that doctors and psychiatrists may still see some of those things that we just haven't figured out answers for yet.
And that's what this totally could be, that this kid fooled them.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the biggest fear that some of us that do purport to have some psychic abilities and stuff, my sister, myself included, and things like that. My sister was always so afraid she was going to be found crazy, or was she crazy? Was this a sign of insanity, you know? So,
yeah, well, I mean, it's all of that is there is such a taboo placed on all this kind of stuff from the social aspect that really makes a lot of people afraid to come out and talk or say anything that may cast them in a light that they might be considered crazy or whatever the case may be. So, yeah. So I'll offer one more thing, and this is from a skeptic, Joe Nickel. So Joe Nickel says that things like the writing on his body could have been done with a wall. He could have stood in front of a wall mirror and used his finger or whatever to scratch things on his body. And he says nothing that was reliably reported in the case was beyond the abilities of a teenager to produce. The tantrums, trances, move furniture, hurled objects, automatic writing, superficial scratches, and other phenomena were just the kinds of things someone of Ronald's age could accomplish, just as others have done before and since. Indeed, the elements of poltergeist phenomena, spirit communication, and demonic possession, taken both separately and especially together, as one progressed to the other, suggests nothing so much as role-playing involved trickery.
Oh, I agree. I mean, look at the Fox sisters. That started a whole spiritual movement in this country. And come to find out years later, they admitted, we were playing a game.
Yeah. Well, just, I mean, look at Milli Vanilli. I mean. Yeah.
This is true.
You're dumb.
Sorry, I just wanted to lighten it a little
bit. That was a good one. That was caught me off guard, but that was good.
So, bottom line, whether you believe that it occurred or you don't, I think at the end of the day, the takeaway is that this 13-year-old boy had something going on. Whether it was demonic possession or some mental illness, he was in pain.
Yeah.
And
And if he was such a ratty, bullying kid, the fact that after that he was the sweetest boy that could ever could be.
Yeah, I mean, how do you just all of a sudden, after all of that, just click and all of a sudden you're now going to, oh, I think I'll go off and become a rocket scientist right. for NASA. So mm-hmm. it's just, you know.
I mean, and they made no money off of this.
Right. And that's my other point about all the priests. The priests aren't in things for the money. I mean, they...
I'm talking about the family or the priests.
But
none of them.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, I mean, this isn't like, you know, during the Hunchback of Notre Dame. We know what that evil priest, you know.
Right.
And I mean, and, you know, the monks actually paid for them to come from Maryland to St. Louis. You know, the travel and everything else.
Right.
And... Yeah. You know, the only money that got made, which was almost 30 years later, or, you know, 22 years later, was by William Peter Blatty when he put out the book, yeah. The Exorcist.
And that's something that I've always said about all these, like, family hauntings or different things like that, especially some of these earlier ones. I'm like, who would put their family through that on a hope and a prayer that they might right. make money off of it? Yeah. Like, you know, like, now granted, nowadays where we've had so many, sure, I can be more skeptical, but, like, when this was a thing that was few and far between, and especially in a culture that very much looked down. I mean, you look at Betty and Barney Hill, you know, like, mm-hmm. Why they were already an interracial couple, which was already a thing that was horrible to the people back right. then, you know, and they're coming out saying they were abducted. Why would these people put themselves through that? Yeah. I mean, and that's the same with this. Why would they put this kid through
all of this?
Especially
in the time of... You know, of when they lived in.
Yeah.
You're right. I mean, that was taboo.
Oh, you
right.
kept, I mean, this is the, like, late 40s or 50s. Like, you kept that mm-hmm. stuff to yourself. Right. I mean, abuse and everything was
kept.
I mean,
you know, I hate to say it, but, I mean, they still did lynchings back then.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, just, yeah, so, you know, I mean, I only imagine that, I would assume that based on the news articles and things probably came out after, or at least in the middle of kind of how things were going, so that they didn't have to
remember. Yeah,
they didn't have to hopefully worry about a lot of retaliation or anything from the community that this was all taking place in. But I could imagine even some community outrage with, mm-hmm. "Can't believe you brought this into my neighborhood or into my
well." So see, that's the thing; nobody really knew about it that it was actually happening in St. Louis because of the book and the movie. The movie pushed it as happening in Maryland.
Yeah, yeah. Or at least in D.C. Yeah. I mean, it's that area.
Right.
So.
That had nothing to do with St. Louis.
Right.
And then it was just kind of like the neighborhood gossip and stuff like that.
Right.
And then radio stations would go there, you know, every Halloween and broadcast from there and stuff like that.
Right.
But nobody actually went and did an investigation until we got there and filmed it.
Yep. So,
and so how did you guys, we've got a few minutes, I'm curious to ask about this, how did you guys catch wind of that?
Greg Myers, who is from St. Louis, actually contacted, and Greg, we've had him in several movies with us, mm-hmm. He contacted the Booth Brothers and said, hey, now you know the Exorcist actually happened here. Hmm. And that's all it took for, you know, these two filmmakers to go.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, even if it turned out to be nothing, I'd still want to know more about it. You know.
Well, Greg put in so much work on this, him and another lady named Sandy, that they handed over a ream of research about 3 inches thick of, you know, what all happened here. You know, and the times and dates and everything else.
I mean, that's just... So I do want to ask, it may be covered in the documentary. I got to be honest, my daughter was not letting me finish last night. What happened to the diary that was found?
I guess that is the original diary is in the Vatican.
So they took it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, we got copies of it. Yeah.
Yeah. So
I mean, old fashioned typewriter. That's how they did it. You know. So
that's crazy, man. And briefly want to touch again on that, the curse aspect, the Exorcist curse, you know, and then even you said your crew had...
We had things happen, but I don't know if I want to call it, say we were cursed or
right.
not.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how I feel. As a pagan, I don't even know how I feel about curses. But
you know, even Linda Blair, who, you know, I've worked with and we've got to know each other through the years and stuff. I mean, she had her back broke while they were filming this. You know, but that's because they just weren't treating her very
good. Yeah, they weren't doing something right.
Yeah, and she thinks that things through the years, she says it's very easy to automatically just blame it on the exorcist. But, I mean, you know, people get up there and they do point out the Booth brothers both got very, very ill. I ended up having brain surgery, a stroke, and a bunch of heart attacks. But the three of us are also... I've been musicians from the time we were 13.
Right. As I say, you lived a quiet a life before that,
yeah,
right?
I mean, were just puritanical.
Yeah.
And, I mean, look at me. Do I look puritanical?
Well, you look like the Quaker Oats guy.
Yeah. I'm surprised.
My hair ain't white yet.
I'm surprised you didn't wear your hat with the belt buckle on it.
Well, I want to move into real quick into our listener story before we wrap things up here. We've got one this week comes from a person, once again, from the Haunted History of Kentucky. Like I said, this has become my favorite Facebook group. People are so willing to share on there like no other group. And this comes from a patron on there called MJ Sweat. Here's his story.
I lost my beautiful fiance in February 2017. I recall some of the last things she said, but more vividly I recall what she said to me just 24 hours before she had an aneurysm and slipped into a coma. I worked as a bouncer at a club in downtown Louisville. She stayed here with my grandson we had custody of. She was normally in bed when I came in, but that Saturday she couldn't sleep. When I got home, she told me that she went to the bathroom and washed her face, and when she looked behind her, a tall, dark figure was there. She screamed, and in fact, she called me several times that night. Unfortunately, though, that was the last night we shared together. I don't think my heart has ever healed. I never believed in anything like this stuff before, but she was the most truthful person I had ever known. And even when she knew I'd be pissed about something, she always still told me the truth. But it made me wonder. Is there really an angel of death? And is that what visited her?
All right, yeah, so possibly the angel of death. I mean, who knows?
Well, I mean, I remember seeing this story come up, and some people that were commenting saying, like, well, if she was having an aneurysm later that evening, she could have had something going on in her brain where she was, hallucinating or whatever the case,
or is that what causes you to see it?
Hey, who knows?
Yeah,
I mean, that's the beautiful thing. At the end of the day, nobody knows.
Nobody knows.
Not yet. Nope. I mean, we only use a quarter of our brain.
Right. Yeah. Right.
The rest of it just has been mapped out yet.
Yep. Right. So send your stories to fearscapepodcast@gmail.com or find us on any of our social media at Fearscape Pod. Send those there. And on top of that, I wanted to say, make sure to check out, if you can find it, The Haunted Boy, The Secret Diary of the Exorcist. That's such a great...
Or it's also called The Haunted Boy, The Exorcist Files.
Right. Yeah. I saw that as well. So check that out. Of course, check out Keith Age as much as possible because he's the bomb diggity. You can check out the Louisville Ghost Hunter Society. But we got to get out of here. Time flies, my friend.
Yep. And just remember, if you like what you hear... Go ahead and click that follow button wherever you get your pods at.
Yeah, and review and rate wherever you can if you're listening on Stitcher, wherever. We love you guys so much. Thank you for tuning in. Most of you guys know WCHQ is closing its doors on December 31st. So this is only after this one, two more to go on the radio. So make sure you subscribe to us on where our podcast is so you can continue to listen.
Yep.
But we got to get out of here.
Yep.
But thank you so much, Keith, for stopping by. Always a pleasure. We will absolutely have you back a million times.
Thank you. Love to be here.
We love it, man. And on that, we'll get out of here. Make sure to listen to WCHQ on 100.9 FM or www.wchqfm.com or check out all the podcasts at the DNN at destinationcomics.com/DNN. And this is Stefan, and I'm out of here. I'll catch you on the flip side.
This has been Josh. The truth is out there.
All right, remember, folks, hold those blankets extra tight. And good night, everybody.
Good night.